ideal of being, transforming itself to specific ideals, but each ideal being perfect and being integrated within the whole. Isn't that great? In other words, it's not just that each individual calculus is correct, it's that it has perfect integration within the whole. It already has defined relationship within the whole, predetermined relationship. The truth of all truths, we could say, is able to focus in on the specific truth, the specific calculus, which is correct and appropriate and is brought to focus at every instance within that consciousness of being. Or like I said before, the fact that the whole consciousness of being is able to stroboscope itself, to focus in upon the individualized consciousness of its being without fragmenting that individualized consciousness from the whole. Oh, we have to sit in that position. To be able to focus in on any of these laws, on any of the details of these laws, and yet not fragment ourselves from the whole, not pull ourselves away from the whole, but always realizing that it's the whole of being that's doing it, that it's the whole model in which it's occurring. Never just happening here or happening there or a place value on a chart here or a place value on the chart there, but always going on simultaneously within the whole. And now, of course, for the purpose of exploration and exercise, we have our same opportunity. If being is doing this, then obviously the 7x7 is doing this. The mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love of being are doing this, right? So we could say in this place value that the mind of the Christ, now this isn't being here anymore, this is in the operative sense. So it's the mind of consciousness, or the mind of the self-operative being, or the mind of the Christ, is the mind of its Christ ideal, is that which appears as the individualized consciousness of my Christ mind. Did I put that clearly, I hope? Which is savior to the belief that the little I could have a mind separate or apart from that ideal. That's a wonderful exercise. And I implore you, if you haven't before, to do a lot of it. Really, the spirit of the Christ is bringing out the individual consciousness of itself. The individual consciousness which appears as the Christ consciousness of the spirit of my being, and therefore couldn't bring out anything else. It couldn't bring out the fact that I would be a material being. If spirit is doing it, it can only bring out that which is like unto itself. So it would have to bring forth a spiritual calculus, a spiritual ideal. Yes? Etc., etc. You can follow the implications. So we have each major facet of being, each synonymous term of being, capable in its Christhood, capable in its operative sense of processing itself, of focusing in upon the details of its own being, the inner calculus of its own being. Okay? But of course, You can see this in greater depth by bringing in the numeral characteristics again. So you can have then, for example, the power of the Christ is the power of my individualized Christ consciousness, or the individualized Christ consciousness, which saves me or anything else from the belief that its consciousness would not be empowered, or that it could be empowered from some other source. No, there's one power plant. There's one operation that's going on in the universe, and it's processing everything. So truly, if that infinite being is able to focus in on the specifics, the specific calculus of its own being, you know, what's it really focusing in upon? In a major sense, it's focusing in upon the calculus of my being. It's really able to focus in upon the micro models of its being. If it were not able to consider micro models, I wouldn't have one imprinted deep within me. But it is able to focus in on the specific calculations of its being. And it doesn't do anything partially, so it focuses in on all of the specific calculations of its being, and, of course, specifics of that. So certainly at that place value, it is bringing out micro models of its being. And certainly that could appear as my individualized consciousness, my individualized calculus combinations, or one could say in a more shorthand view, as the micro model of my being. So one could say that being in its entirety is able to focus in on the micro models of its being and bring them forth in absolute perfection. And I would say that that was a very holistic exercise for this place value. And that's really all it brings forth. And it has the inner ability to do that. And then we can explore those micro models through the 7x7 and through the characteristics of those micro models. We can know that they are conceived, you know, mind-conceived micro models that are always coming out of the power plant of the activity of the mind that is processing inside that wonderful computer. That, you know, it's always coming forth from the ordering capability that's going on inside of that wonderful computer. It's always bringing forth models, right? It couldn't do that if it didn't have soul in their processing, bringing out very complete models. And if those models couldn't have right relationship with one another if there wasn't a principle coordinating them. And they couldn't exist and live and express harmoniously in the whole if there wasn't that incredible sense of life and dynamics that's always going on in the computer. It sets up the very existence of those, the very flowing mode of those micro models that have been structured. And it brings forth their computations with one another in a collective way. Right? And it does that because that computer has a sense of truth going within it. And it obviously, oh well, it brings forth always within a sense of plan, always a sense of glory, always a sense of completion. It brings forth really those micro models within the universality of the love of its being. I mean, you know, that computer has a sense of love in it. So it can't process anything that doesn't have purpose and isn't saving at all times. I mean, it's just always placing it in universal perspective and bringing out ultimate blessing because it doesn't do this just for fun. You know, it has a purpose within itself. It is processing and transforming the subjectivity of itself to objectivity for a purpose. So it's bringing forth the perfection of these models within its universal context. If it were doing that, there would be no way that we could then see it, as we're going to in a moment, actually evidenced, expressed, because now we're going to make the smooth transition that is inevitable over to the law of eternalization, where we're going to focus on what happens to that, those models, those, you know, micro models that have been brought out. Well, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. Being says, I objectify that ideal that I have brought forth, that model of my being. I'm able to focus in on every detail, but my details are always wholes, so they're micro models of the whole model. And I'm able to objectify it, to express it, to evidence it. And I do more than that. I forever eternalize it. It can't escape. It can't go away. It can't disappear. I forever am giving unto that what I am. I forever am giving to that divine expression of my being, that divine model, all that I am. I am really giving to that compound model, which is a compound of all the micro models. I am giving to that macro model all that I am. I'm giving it, and we don't have to rehearse this again, the 7x7 of my being. I am providing that wonderful macro model of my expression with the whole of my being. And I hold it there. I preserve it there. I embrace it there. It is contained there forever. It's wonderful. Anything that being, as it has divinely followed its urge to bring forth and processed and outputted, is eternalized. It's protected. We don't have to protect it. We don't have to give it life. It has a built-in sense of life from that being. It has an inner sense of provision and supply within itself. That entire macro model that is multidimensional is forever supplied and protected and nurtured and cherished and welcomed within the embrace of being itself. So, of course, we get here that wonderful aspect of being as mother and coming forth from the divine science dimension, where we saw the self-containment of being. We see here that that which is contained within being, remember, we've just got a better microscope going here, so we're really just focusing on what is contained within that self-containment of being. And it says, the whole macro model of my being is contained there, and I love it, and I give to it everything that I am, and I nurture it and protect it, and I would never let anything happen to it, ever. It's just such a great law. That law of eternalization that just is forever saying, I feed my child. I feed what I have brought forth, and I protect that which I have brought forth forever. Therefore, the little or the big macro model doesn't have to feed itself or protect itself. though it can by virtue of reflection, and we'll see that in another dimension, it is fed by the father of its own being, and it is protected by the mother of its own being. It's wonderful, just wonderful. So, then we explore this a little through exercise. Again, we see then that being is eternalizing its own objective state, the ideal of its being. And being is preserving its own objective state, the idea of its being. Or we could look at it that that which has been objectified is eternally maintained, sustained, conserved, fed, upheld by its principle, by its being, the divine parent that caused it to be. And that which has been objectified is always preserved, accepted, embraced, contained, nurtured, held, protected, and cared for by the divine being, the divine principle, the divine parent that has caused it to be. And as you know, as the nature of the divine subjective being, the divine parent, is the seven, then that seven is fathering itself. And as the divine seven is also mother, it is mothering what it has brought forth. Itself. It's mothering the aspects of its own being. So the seven are eternalizing their objectified state, that which they have brought forth as idea, by their ability to father their idea, to give it all that they are, to give it the 7x7 reflection of what they are. I mean, what does it have to give except what it is, right? So it's forever fathering that which it's brought forth with the 7x7 of its being. And it's forever mothering that which it has brought forth with the 7x7 of its being. It's terrific. We never lose the 7x7, but now it's in a whole different aspect of law. Now we're focusing on the provision of that being for its idea, the eternalization that that being has for its idea, and its ability to preserve and protect that which it has brought forth, its objectified state. So obviously, we can focus in depth by focusing in upon the sevenfold reflection of each synonym, as well as the numeral characteristics, and of course, the counterfeit claims. So we could say, as being eternalizes its objectified state, it eternalizes the appearances of this state, whether as the compound idea, macro model, or as that which appears as man. Consequently, the real man, or that which we really are, is forever fed by the life force, the fatherhood of being, and need not turn to any lesser source for its provision, not even to its own independent efforts, but must rely on the eternal support system that operates for its benefit. Kind of hard for us to do, isn't it? Yes, we trust that it's there. Yes, we trust that it's doing this for its idea, but, maybe we'll help it out a little bit, right? Okay. And as being embraces its objectified state, it embraces the appearances of this state, whether as the compound idea, the macro model, or as that which appears as man. Consequently, the real man, or that which we are, is forever preserved by the infinite self-containment of love, which in its motherhood does not allow one facet of its being to be ejected from the protection of its matrix womb, where it could believe itself to be abandoned, lost, frightened, open to the danger of disintegration. So the counterfeits there are real evident, aren't they? Counterfeit claim that it's not supportive, therefore that the little I has to industrially support itself, that it's not mothered and cared for, that it can disintegrate and fall apart by virtue of its own hands or heaven knows some other, right? But no. No, really, really no. Because, you know, this macro model is like a big crystal. I don't usually like to use physical symbols because they have great limits, as we know. But the symbol of the crystal is such an incredible symbol that I like to use it in this place value and also the one below it on the level of Christian Science, the law of universal reflection. I like to see that wonderful macro model as this, as a crystal. And I like to see being the center and circumference of that crystal, forever giving to every wonderful facet of that crystal, of its being, all that it is, and forever embracing and containing that whole macro model, that whole crystal, within its motherly embrace. Not forcing any facet of that crystal to eject itself. I mean, when you look at a crystal, it's just ludicrous to think that any part of it could eject itself. You can see that right away you wouldn't have a hole, but you know you would, because something is in that model that makes it holographic. Those of you who have been around me a lot and have heard me speak a lot are familiar with my love of the term holography. And those of you who haven't, have a treat in store because it's a great term. And it's a wonderful term for this place value and for the law of universal reflection. Holography, of course, is truly a human word and a human symbol, but it doesn't have to be taken in that context. It actually was brought forth, the mathematical principle of it, I should say, was brought forth in 1947 by Denis Gabor in a discovery that later won him the Nobel Prize. But a demonstration of holography had to await the invention of the laser. And anyway, to be very brief about it, it's a method of lensless photography in which the wave field of light scattered by an object is recorded on a plate as an interference pattern. And when the photographic record, or the hologram, is placed in a coherent light beam like a laser, the original wave pattern is regenerated and a three-dimensional image appears. And because there's no focusing lens, the plate appears as a meaningless pattern of swirls, but any piece of the hologram will reconstruct the entire image. And now you know why I love the term so much. Because should any piece of that hologram be ejected or think itself to be ejected, the rest of the hologram has the imprint of the whole to such a degree within itself that it automatically outpictures the entire image again. Mm-hmm. So it is self-contained forever. It is non-destructive. It is not possible. Consequently, it is an incredible symbol for understanding what's happening at this place value. That being is forever feeding the whole of its being and containing the whole of its being. It's really holographically operative at this point. It's just a really incredible symbol to use. And really, people in the sciences now are using it quite a bit. And there are several books that really deal with this. But the original book that I read, which is wonderful, is called, let's see, I've got it down here somewhere, but I think The Holographic Paradigm and Other Something or Others. I have the actual name here. Oh, and Other Paradoxes. Okay. So I recommend that if you're not familiar with the term, that's an excellent book to get. And there are many quotes in there by Carl Prebram, who's a brain researcher at Stanford, and by David Baum, who's a physicist and at least was at the writing of that book in London. Dealing with the fact, Prebram's view anyway, dealing with the fact that he feels that the brain is holographic and that information is stored everywhere in the brain and not just in one facet, so therefore it's really non-destructive, that if a piece of the brain is destroyed, that if it's retrained well enough, the rest of it is holographic and it does have a memory imprint and that it will restore. So anyway, it's very exciting. He believes that the brain is a hologram interpreting a holographic universe. Isn't that exciting? And phenomena, he says, of altered states of consciousness, which reflect altered brain states, may be due to a literal attunement to the invisible matrix that generates concrete reality. Isn't that right on? That's just incredible, right? So it's wonderful. You can see that any consciousness that is clear, any consciousness that is responding to the millennium, is responding to the thousand-year period that is pushing itself through, is going to respond. Now, this gentleman, of course, does not study the science of being. He doesn't even, I'm sure, know about the science of being. That has nothing to do with it. He has a clear enough consciousness that through his own symbols, he can feel not only the science of the 6,000-year period, but the holistics of the 7,000-year period. And he obviously interprets it through his symbols and through his area of research. Why not? If it's infinite and it's going on everywhere, we don't have privy to the information. We may interpret it through our symbol system and our code system, but everybody else is certainly capable of interpreting that same information through its symbol system and its code system because it's infinite information. And it is contained within the holograph of being. And that holograph is always fed and it's always protected. So therefore, it has all of that going on within it. And as we're now approaching the seventh millennium, the 7,000-year period of holistics, every consciousness that is at all aware universally is feeling holistics and is interpreting it through wherever they're sitting in other facets of their consciousness. If they're involved in medicine, they may be now thinking about holistic health. You know, if, like Prebram, they're involved in brain research, they are discovering the fact that the brain is holographic.